The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to this site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
Hi, everybody. My name's Clint Curtis, and behave yourself. Anyway, sounds like everybody heard the story, so I don't have to go into that, right? I said, sounds like everyone's heard the story, so I don't have to go into it, right? In 2000, I was working for Yang Enterprises, which was a company in Oviedo, Florida, and their chief lobbyist, their corporate attorney and Speaker of the House of Florida was Tom Feeney. And he was there to feed his contracts. So he came in one day, one of my first introductions to him, and he wanted us to build a vote flipping software, vote fraud program. And he, very specific what he wanted, he wanted it to run on a Windows platform, be touchscreen capable. He wanted it to not have any additional hardware, so you didn't have to bring in a keyboard, you didn't have to sit across the street in a truck. You could just sit there and punch a button, and the votes all flip. And he wanted the source code to be hidden. So, well, you couldn't do that. So I told him you couldn't do that. The owner of the company said we'd build it anyway. And my interpretation initially was that he wanted to prevent you evil Democrats, because I was a Republican, from cheating. So we know how bad you are. So... So I built it for him, gave it to Mrs. Yang along with the sheet on how you prevent vote fraud. You know, you make sure you have possibly no network, because networks can be hacked. You have duplicates receipts, you do accounting, a lot like you'd treat a bank account. And she said, you don't understand. In order to get this contract, we have to hide the vote fraud in the source code. This is to flip the vote in South Florida. So, that's kind of nice, huh? So, I told her, not only should we not be doing this, we can't do it. You cannot hide source code. That's that. And that was it for me. And then I find out, a couple years later, of course, that everything that I told him, I mean, even the most basic thing that any computer person knows to prevent fraud is now part of the law to allow fraud. It would almost be criminal not to be doing fraud, the way things are set up. From a programmer's standpoint, you know, as far as what you can do about it, the problem is there's a difference between Republicans and Democrats. Democrats care. Republicans want to win, and that's it. We figure the actual what we want will be worked out later, as long as we win. So while you have 47,000 different groups trying to save the world, we just want to win. You know, it's pretty simple. So if you want to do something, just get all your groups together at one time. You could probably do it in a couple of months if you got every environmental group, every group you have, just say, we're not going to do anything else. We're going to make the vote system, and we're going to fix it. And you could fix it in 2 months. But you've got to abandon everything else for those months and not save the whales and not do anything else, but fix that problem. Because if you don't fix that problem, nothing else you want to do will matter. Winning. The goal has to be to win. And once you get it fixed, then you can go back and drift into 1,000 different groups and focus on what you really wanted to do, but you can do it better because now you won. You're not standing in the, you know, and you've got to ask yourself how much you're going to do. Are you willing to send out emails? Are you willing to have marches? You know, civil rights. There is no civil rights. If you have no vote, you have no civil rights. So you got to get out and you got to march. You've got to plant yourself and you got to block some traffic once in a while. The guy who took over the little house and now he has all the media coverage, if we were all standing in Main Street, we'd have the media coverage. And that's what you got to do. But that's just me. You know, Republican.
Hi, my name is Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. I am pleased to follow that liar, Clint Curtis. In case anybody missed it this morning, Clint Curtis passed the lie detector test, and it ran in this morning's St. Petersburg Times. It was written by, the article was broken by a Pulitzer Prize winning reporter. She got it right about the lie detector test. Okay, moving on. Her name is Lucy Morgan. Pulitzer Prize winning. Yes, I do. I'll post it. Actually, I don't have, oh, wait a minute. You people are troublemakers. No, actually, I don't have it here. It will be on bradblog.com pretty soon, I have a feeling. Okay, so keep an eye out. Now, the work that I've been doing at bradblog.com since November 3rd, I'm going to try and make it quick because I know we're running late. I've been reporting on all of these election irregularities and all of the work and the evidence and the things that so many of you guys have been doing. And it occurred to me along the way, it didn't take very long to realize that there were all these disparate groups out there, all these different movements, all these people trying to bring attention to what was going on. And I wanted to develop sort of a central clearinghouse for all of this information. Because it was hard, as you know, it's hard work. It's hard work getting out. It's hard work getting out this story. The media is not on our side. We have to take matters into our own hands. The politicians are not on our side. Yes, a few of them are, but they have a very difficult time getting the word out. You know, Clint Curtis gave sworn testimony before members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on videotape. It's at bradblog.com. You can see it. They held hearings in Columbus, Ohio on this matter. C-SPAN wasn't there. John Conyers was there, and a couple of other brave Democrats who were willing to try to get the word out, but the media wasn't there. And most of the Congress folks weren't there. So I brought together VelvetRevolution.us, created this in order to try to bring these groups together, give us a greater voice out there. Now, Velvet Revolution is a term that was coined, I believe, during Václav Havel's, during the Czechoslovakian overthrow of that corrupt government, when the people hit the streets in massive civil disobedience to say, enough is enough, we're not going to accept this corruption in our government. It worked. It was peaceful. It worked in Czechoslovakia, it worked in the Soviet Union, it worked in South Africa, and most recently it worked in the Ukraine in an election which was very similar to another one that I recall that didn't get nearly as much press attention in some banana republic named the United States of America. Now, so, we brought this group together and what I noticed was, and actually I had hoped to open it earlier, and then along came Clint Curtis, and that kind of slowed things up, thank you, for nothing. But what happened in the process was on January 6th, There was a Congress came together in a joint session to confirm or not the electoral votes, and something very unique happened, especially for Democrats. You all came together. You all did something at the same time. You all agreed that there was a problem in Ohio, and you called your senators, and you called your congressmen, and you sent them email. And, you know, I talked to folks who were actually in Congress at the time, in the Senate, going from office to office. They said they were trying to get one senator to stand up. And they said they couldn't go into an office where the phone wasn't ringing. They'd put it down. Half a second later, they'd pick it back up. It was ringing off the hook. You guys did that. We all did that. We found something we could agree on, and in fact, for the first time ever in 135 years, this arcane constitutional provision was invoked, and an entire slate of electors in Ohio was challenged. It was a historic moment because the people were working together for one simple idea. Now, VelvetRevolution.us is a very simple idea, and we've launched a very simple campaign. It's called the Divestiture for Democracy campaign. We are asking, in a letter sent to the nine major American voting machine companies on February 21st, President's Day, we sent them a letter asking them to do the right thing for this country. We have asked these companies, who are receiving public money to run the very important public business of our election system, to record and count the votes. The most basic element of a democracy, as Clint said, if we don't get that right, frankly, guys, you can argue about all the issues you want, nothing else matters. Now, they're using public funds to run these elections. They've turned it into a private affair. They're keeping their hardware and software secret. No, not good enough. We have asked them to do the right thing, the patriotic thing for this country. We have said to them, we have given them 60 days to announce that they're going to open their hardware and software for inspection, that they're going to include a paper ballot with every vote cast in this country, that they're going to institute a corporate policy that will keep their CEOs, like Walden O'Dell for Diebold, as I'm sure you guys know, the number one voting machine company in this country, the CEO sends out a fundraising letter to Republicans promising to deliver the state of Ohio to George W. Bush. No, this is going to stop, and we're going to hold them accountable, because these guys in D.C., are the congressmen. I see Congressman McKinney here. Thank you for being here. They're doing everything that they can. A few of them are doing everything that they can. They're proposing legislation, but guess what? The Democrats don't control, not even close, the House or the Senate, and nothing is going to happen. They're going to have a hell of a hard time getting anything moving there. It is up to us. Let them wrangle with this thing. She'll take care of it. She's going to do the best she can. In the meantime, it's up to the people, okay? To take on, we're going straight to these voting machine companies. We've given them 60 days to do the right thing. If they don't, if they do, we will laud them high and low. If they don't, we are going to launch a massive and sustained divestiture and boycott against these companies, their affiliates, and their clients. Enough is enough. These companies are accepting public money, HAVA money, millions of dollars of our money to keep our elections secret. Now, after we launch this campaign, I can say that the great, is he still here, Green presidential candidate David Cobb was the first one to come on board and endorse this, the first of the presidential candidates. Actually, John Conyers beat him to it. He was right there endorsing this and calling on these companies to do the right thing. Or he was going to propose legislation to keep HAVA money, the millions of dollars of HAVA money, from going to these people. Ralph Nader has come on board and endorsed this. 23 House members, including Congresswoman McKinney, has endorsed this campaign and has written letters to the companies telling them, knock it off, do the right thing for your country, or we're going to do everything in our power to ensure that you don't get another dime of government money. Okay. This is a simple idea, okay? We can all agree on this. I'm going to ask you to do a very simple thing. It will cost you nothing. Go to velvetrevolution.us. Click the link that says send email to the companies. In less than 60 seconds, you can send a note to all 9 of the major American voting machine companies telling them that you stand with Velvet Revolution and you're not going to take it. Bury these people with email. We've taken care of the technical stuff. All you got to do is go there and sign this letter. Then send it to a few people. Then, if you want, you can give us a donation. If you want. Because we don't get government money. We don't have parties on board giving us money. We are not party-oriented. We are issue-oriented. This is not about right and left. This is about right and wrong. If you care about this stuff, if you care about it, start supporting these people. Groups like velvetrevolution.us, frankly, guys, open your pocketbooks. I hate to ask for it. I am embarrassed to ask for it, okay? But we're not going to get the money from, we're not getting any HAVA money. I don't know why. I'll ask her if she can help with that later. Guys, make noise, be the media, support this campaign. Keep an eye on what's going on at velvetrevolution.us. A lot of you guys here are already affiliates. We've got message boards there. We have been covering news, analysis, background items, action items on what you can do concerning election reform going back to November, a huge database of information. Just before I came out here, we've opened up our second issue, Above and Beyond Election Reform, Media Reform. If we, you know, if the media was doing their job, this house would be full because they would understand, the American people would understand what is going on with their elections. So we're working on that too. But please, everyone, march together on this. It's a no-brainer. Come by, send email. We're also leading the charge against this phony American Center for Voting Rights that has led to this Baker-Carter Commission. I don't want to use up time talking about it now. But come by bradblog.com, come by velvetrevolution.us. You must make noise, you must be the media, you must start a blog, you must let your friends know. We gotta stop talking to each other. Guess what? We agree. We know what happened. Go tell some of those people who don't know. Call and write to your representatives in Congress like you did on January 6th. Put up a sign on the freeway. Go learn from the great freeway blogger at freewayblogger.com, who reaches thousands, perhaps millions of people a day. The secret, as he will tell you, is cardboard and duct tape. All right, guys. One person really does make a difference. I can attest to that. Clint Curtis can attest to that. As a group, we can change the world. A quote that I know all of you guys know, probably, from Gandhi, and I hope I get it right. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. They're fighting us now, guys. Keep fighting back. We're going to win. If you don't quit, you can never lose. Keep fighting, guys. Spread the word. VelvetRevolution.us. Thanks. Thank you, guys.
My name's Lowell Finley, and the first thing I want to say is we got the order wrong here, because what I'm going to say is not going to be quite as rousing, and I wish he had gone last. I'm an attorney. I've specialized in election law for about 20 years now. I'm based in California, but what I'm here to talk about is work I've been doing with hundreds and hundreds of activists in New Mexico, and perhaps provide some lessons from our experience about one means of redress, one means of obtaining justice in this area, which is going into the courts. And I want to talk about three different legal remedies, three different approaches, and some of their pros and cons. And again, a lot of this comes out of our experience in New Mexico. As by way of background, I was the lead attorney in putting together the effort for the Green and Libertarian presidential candidates to make a formal request for a recount in New Mexico. And working with an organization called Help America Recount Fund, we raised the money to pay the deposit of about $110,000 in order to get that recount started. That money, by the way, came in small donations from people all over the United States who sent in more than $100,000 within about a 15-day period after we first went up on the internet and Air America Radio. And I think it was just an indication of the kind of tremendous concern and desire to do something in the aftermath of what we all knew was a very questionable election last November. One of the good things about recounts is that they're available soon after elections. In some states, they're relatively inexpensive. They do provide a means for a lot of people to participate, a lot of grassroots activism as monitors of a recount process. In the final analysis, they can actually change the outcome of an election. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen sometimes, as folks saw in Washington State. There are a lot of cons to recounts, and we encountered those in droves in New Mexico. First of all, only candidates can request them in virtually all jurisdictions, not voters, not citizen activists. Secondly, elections officials can and do stall the recount process. You're probably all very aware of that in Ohio. We encountered the same thing in New Mexico. Under New Mexico law, as soon as the formal request was made and the deposit was submitted, the state canvassing board, consisting of the governor, secretary of state, and chief justice, all of whom, by the way, are Democrats, are required to immediately send out summonses to the precinct workers so that they will gather on an appointed day no later than 10 working days after the election and start conducting the recount. The state canvassing board didn't even meet until after 5 p.m. on the day that that deadline expired to even consider the request, and that was after we had gone into court to try to get a court order to force them to start the process. And of course, they knew as well as we did that the Electoral College vote was deadline was coming up, and they did not want to have their state under the microscope in this situation. That's one of the big cons to the recount approach. It can be very expensive, and this is something we encountered in New Mexico. While the statute was very clear that you only have to pay $110,000 under a formula that's been there for many years, based on the number of precincts and machines you're asking to recount, the state came up with an argument that no, even though that's what it says, what it really means is the state officials can require you to post the full estimated cost of the recount before they have to do anything. And New Mexico has a very archaic and very expensive system, very wasteful, that requires sheriffs to individually hand deliver summonses to every single election worker. They came up with an estimate of $1.4 million and wanted us to post that within 48 hours. To finish that part of the story, we didn't get a recount, and we're in court right now fighting out over the principle, which is a New Mexico matter, the principle of whether they can get away with demanding more than what the statute provides for. But when we saw that we were hitting a brick wall on that, and when we found out that the Secretary of State was encouraging county elections officials to destroy the electronic evidence from the election, to clear the machines of their internal memories under the pretext of preparing for a very, very small set of school district elections in the state, we decided to be proactive and file a new lawsuit, this time on behalf of voters, eight individual voters. And we filed under a provision in New Mexico state constitution that guarantees the right to free and open elections. About half the states have some comparable provision. They can be very significant because, as a lot of you probably know, we don't have a federal constitutional right to vote or to suffrage or to fair and open elections. But in some states it is there, and in some states the courts have actually given it some teeth. We found out that that was the case in New Mexico. So we filed a lawsuit asking for an injunction to prohibit any future use of any voting system which we can prove was inaccurate and unreliable in the November 2004 election. This isn't about changing the result. This is about looking to the future and taking the hard evidence from this election that we all know was so flawed and getting it through the court process, getting access to documents, putting elections officials under oath in the discovery process, and putting together the hard proof that can lead to this kind of judicial relief, we hope. The injunction is important, but almost as important is the discovery, just getting at this hard information, which we believe can be very useful to activists who are lobbying county clerks throughout the country. New Mexico uses a wide range of voting systems manufactured by several of the top vendors. It can be very helpful in lobbying for federal legislation, for state legislation, along the lines that have been discussed earlier today. We've ended up moving to that approach, and as you can hear from the way I'm describing this, a lot of these things are particular to the law of this one state. In any kind of approach to going through legal channels to try to accomplish something in this area, obviously it is essential to know the particulars of the law of the state that you're working with. The other area that I wanted to talk about in terms of available legal remedies is election contests. And election contests have certain major advantages. They are under judicial supervision. They're not under the supervision of the very same election officials who conducted the election, who then conduct recounts when they get around to it. They happen relatively quickly. Because their whole purpose is to reverse the outcome of an election if the plaintiff candidate is successful. But they have some downsides. They can be very expensive, like litigation can often be. They can only be brought by candidates. They can't be brought by voters and activists. And many states have remedies that are perverse. New Mexico, for example, the remedy provided in their election contest statute is that if you show that there were irregularities in a precinct, then the solution is to throw out all the ballots from that precinct, not count any of them. That's a problem when the tampering or the irregularities occurred in the precincts of the voters who you think have been cheated. The biggest problems in New Mexico Warren Stewart, who spoke earlier, has done tremendous statistical analysis of what happened in New Mexico. The biggest problems were concentrated in the places where Native American and Hispanic voters, who were overwhelmingly Democratic registrants and who overwhelmingly supported Senator Kerry for president, that's where the biggest problems lie. So going into court on an election contest, you could win the battle and certainly lose the war. We've ended up concluding that the best legal avenue, at least in the context of New Mexico, has been to file an open-ended lawsuit on behalf of voters, trying to get at as much evidence as possible, not tie a court down with the partisan questions about who won this last election, but instead focus their attention on the future and on what they must, under their duty under their constitution, what they must do if we're able to prove, as we expect we will, that the equipment and the systems being used for their elections don't meet their own constitutional standards of free and open elections. So, looking back on this whole experience, and we're right now in a lull in the process where we're just about to go into the intensive discovery phase, I think the lessons that I can take from it, and that any attorneys or activist groups or candidates looking at this sort of set of questions in the future might want to consider, is you have to be very clear on what your objectives are, whether you're primarily focused on trying to change the result of a particular election, or whether instead or primarily you're interested in bringing about hard reform on the particular systems that you can prove through very hard evidence are unreliable and untrustworthy. You need to know what your resources are. Obviously, litigation of any type can be expensive. It also means that you have to assemble teams of people with particular expertise, including the attorneys and the expert witnesses. You need to know your jurisdiction's laws and customs very thoroughly. You can't rely on models like a cookie cutter that may have been used successfully or that are being tried in another state at the same time without adapting them to the particulars of the state you're working in. You certainly need to know your filing deadlines for recounts, for election contests, for any type of litigation. And you need to know what specific remedies the state's laws provide. As I said, it can be a rude surprise to file an election contest and then find out that as your proof is coming in and is being accepted by the court, the result is going to be exactly the opposite of what you had hoped for. And I guess the final point is, as we have tried to do in New Mexico, trying to build relationships with sympathetic local officials and with the media in the course of a project like this. We have hundreds of volunteers who started in this as people willing to participate in observing a recount, but they've stuck with it and they've established relationships with county clerks throughout the state of New Mexico, some of whom have been brought along and recognized that there really is a serious issue here. And they, despite being encouraged by their Secretary of State, have actually voluntarily preserved evidence and allowed us access to it. And similarly, bringing along the media is critically important, because part of what you're trying to accomplish through litigation is not just getting a court order, but getting evidence that will be taken seriously, that will be taken as legitimate by as broad a part of the media as possible. Thanks.